Welcome in, latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Breton. Go by SEC Mike on the Twitters. And there's our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, are you fired up? Tennessee just landed a quarterback. We hit the go live button 2 minutes early. I mean, we got to talk about this.
Mike, transfer portal madness. That's what's going on. Man, it feels like every couple minutes checking whatever source you want to, it feels like there's another portal entry. Somebody's committed. We got teams finishing up spring practice. So, man, it is a crazy time in the world of college football, isn't it? Especially for those of us trying to get together a magazine.
I can't imagine. But hey, don't forget to update your Athlon magazine, Stephen, because Joey Aguilar, I hope I'm saying that right, former starter, 2-year starter, I believe, over at Appalachian State. He was likely going to be UCLA starting quarterback, but Nico went, of course, to old UCLA, and now so Nico was the first holdout. Some people are calling it in college football, Stephen. This is the first trade in college football history because now they're swapping. Tennessee's got them a quarterback, Joey Aguilar. Tell us about him. Does this totally change? Because let's be transparent, Stephen. You were telling me off air, buddy. I don't know if Tennessee's even the preseason top 25 now. So they got to be top five now, right?
Oh, of course, right? You get a transfer quarterback, fill in that last piece of the puzzle for the season. A guy that's got experience, of course. That's going to help Tennessee. Mike, I think it's helpful in this evaluation to just keep in mind that the portal quarterback situation, they don't move very often in the spring. Like most of your quarterbacks move in the fall. It's really the winter transfer window. So Tennessee was already at a disadvantage here. So I cannot wait for the message board drama, pettiness, all that's going to transpire, because you know how this is going to play out. Joey Aguilar is going to put up huge numbers against somebody, and they're going to compare Nico when he throws for, like, you know, 100 yards against some Big Ten defense or whatever. But, Mike, I think when you look at what Aguilar has done in his career at App State, he actually came in, wasn't guaranteed the starting job. He was behind another quarterback. That quarterback got hurt. He stepped in, played well enough to not lose the job, and played pretty well both seasons. There's some pros and cons with his game that we can talk about. But I think at the very least, Tennessee has raised the floor for its quarterback room, which I think they needed to do given the inexperience. They have somebody with experience, and I think they got somebody who can play well in the system.
Well, you know, Stephen, who's always going to be playing well in my mind, that's cousin JR. Come on, yeah. JR, he just gifted another membership, Stephen. This time to David Wheeler. David, I think you're going to like what Steven's got to say about the portal winners or losers. So welcome to the family, cousin David. Thanks to the legend JR. But man, so who won this? They're already asking me in the comments, Steven. Who won the Nico Aguilar trade here? Which side came out on top? Do you think it's UCLA? Do you think it's Tennessee?
So I'll start with the unpopular here. I think Nico's a better quarterback than Joey Aguilar. So I think I'd rather, if you gave me everything equal, which one would I have? I would rather have Nico. But I think with Aguilar, obviously, you're not getting the drama. You're not getting the off-the-field stuff. You're not getting all that craziness. What I think you're getting is a quarterback who's entering his final year of college eligibility, who I think he's kind of like a baller type. You know, he's got the mobility. He's got the arm. He's got the good moxie. Like, he's a tough guy. I think all of those things, like, he's coming in to fight for the starting job. And I think that's what I think that Tennessee can benefit, just like the leadership and all that he's going to bring to the table. There are some concerns with his game, Mike, but I think if all things were equal, Nico's more talented. Aguilar's kind of the right quarterback for the moment for Tennessee with his experience.
Yeah. North of Knox says, go ahead and lie to me, Stephen. Go ahead and lie. But all right, maybe let's ask it this way, Stephen. Again, I think that's completely fair. I mean, Nico, 5-star. 2 weeks ago, a lot of Tennessee fans would tell you, by God, he should be a Heisman contender. You know what I mean? So, again, it's foolish to sit here and say, yeah, a guy, most of us that don't follow Appalachian State had no idea who this guy even was. But Maybe the real question, Stephen, who will perform better, do you think, this year, given the talent surrounding them? How about that? Nico at UCLA, with you know, we've covered that. The offensive line in shambles, lost top running backs, top receivers, play callers literally never done it, or Aguilar being plugged into Josh Heupel, one of the best offensive minds in all of college football. Who do you think is in better position today to have a better 2025 season?
I think it has to be Aguilar. If he starts every game for Tennessee, I mean, I'm just thinking about UCLA's situation right now. Unless there is a wave of transfer portal commitments to come, I can almost guarantee that when we publish the magazine, UCLA's offensive line, running backs, and receivers will be close to the bottom of the Big Ten in the position rankings. I know Tennessee's got some turnover too, but your floor is a lot higher here with Tennessee, and thanks to some of their interior portal additions, I think there should be some optimism about how the offensive line comes together. Mike, I know this isn't a Big Ten preview show, but UCLA's got to play at Ohio State this year. They got to play Penn State. They get to play at USC, Nebraska, at Indiana. They get Utah in the season opener. I mean, you tell me, Mike. I mean, a team with a suspect offensive line, no proven receivers, that seems pretty optimistic to think that is a better situation for Nico at UCLA, right?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And it took me a second there to realize you said Big Ten, UCLA. I was like, what's he talking about? Oh, that's the conference they're in now because of the insanity of that conference getting gobbling up anybody and anybody who, with a pulse in college football. So, yeah, shout out them. But, again, I want to give credit to Chris Lowe, the great Chris Lowe. He's the one that broke this Aguilar news. And I'm trying to look up the guy's stats. I know one thing that is held against him, Stephen. 24 interceptions he's thrown the last 2 years. So a little bit turnover prone. You know, that's got to get corrected if he's going to start at Tennessee. But 2 years ago, over 3,700 passing yards. Last year, over 3,000. I say 24 interceptions, Stephen, but 56 passing touchdowns. So the guy's capable in over just shy of 500 rushing yards and 5 touchdowns. So guy's mobile. You know, Heupel really wants a quarterback that can run the football. What from you that you've seen of this Aguilar, why is he throwing so many interceptions? And do you think that is something that can be corrected in this Tennessee offense?
I think he's definitely capable of taking some risks. And I think that's kind of like the good or the bad. Like if you look at his numbers, I mean, he was at the top or near the top of the Sun Belt in completions of 30 plus yards each of the last 2 years. So you'll get some good, you'll get some bad. The other thing is, and thinking about App State from 2023 to 2024, Sean Clark was their head coach. He got fired at the end of 2024. I didn't think that their offense, especially like they had been such a run first, they've had kind of a good foundation. It felt like that support system wasn't as strong last year as it was maybe in 2023, which is why I think maybe you've seen his completion rate slip from 64% to 56% last season. So I think kind of all around, like how does he go from Sun Belt starter to SEC starter? That's going to be a big question. Level play is going to be much higher week to week. You can also say Heupel and this offensive staff can probably scheme some stuff up for him based upon his mobility, his ability to get outside the pocket. Maybe you can also scheme up some open shots downfield, let him take advantage of his arm on those big plays. The thing they will have to corral is those interceptions. They're magnified in the Sun Belt. They're even greater in the SEC because the windows and everything obviously closes a lot faster when you're playing the Alabamas and Oklahomas as opposed to Marshall and James Madison.
And then one other question that just came to mind, Stephen, would it absolutely stun you if the redshirt freshman, Jake Merklinger, beats out Aguilar? Just because I know there's so little information on him. He's barely played in college football. Meanwhile, Aguilar's started for 2 years in a row and was projected to start at UCLA before Nico got there. But Would that stun you, or would that just tell you that maybe Merklinger is better than we're giving him credit for? Because it's very hard to evaluate him given what we've seen.
I think if Merklinger or McIntyre beats out Aguilar, I would actually probably take that as a good sign for Tennessee. because I think if you bring in somebody with experience and Aguilar's been an upper tier quarterback in the Sun Belt, then that tells you something. That should tell you that the two young quarterbacks develop. So having that offensive experience probably pays off. You know, asking somebody who didn't get a spring practice to step in and learn the offense and go right away, it's not impossible. It's not easy, though. So I guess I wouldn't be surprised. I think if you're bringing in somebody like this and you're probably paying him some NIL money, he's probably your guy, though.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we'll do more SEC, but this is just breaking news. So I'm kind of peppering Steven with questions as I'm thinking of them here. But the over-under was 9.5 with Nico. It has shifted down to 8.5 with no quarterback. Well, I should say with no portal quarterback added. Now they've got this Joey Aguilar. Would it surprise you at all if this goes back to 9.5? Or would you be more confident this staying at 8.5 with Joey Aguilar committing to Tennessee?
I would probably guess it stays at 8.5. I would say I would feel better about Tennessee hitting the over with Aguilar. So if you're holding like a Tennessee 8.5 over, I think your odds of that going up, it probably increase. But I think as far as that over under, Mike, you look at that Florida, Alabama, those three, probably the three most likely games that Tennessee would stumble. Then you get into the Oklahoma, Vanderbilt, maybe even Arkansas swing contest. So I think 8.5 sounds about right for Tennessee here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I was just hoping you say he's going to win two Heismans, even though he's probably only got one. I think he's got 1 year of eligibility, but
he could sue for another one, right?
Yeah. NCAA can't win a case to save their life. So yeah, I have no doubt that he could get that done. But so that was literally just breaking news before we actually even hit go live a little bit early because, you know, we wanted to jump into this Joey Aguilar news. But Steven and I were going to jump deep into the transfer portal. The second window is still ongoing. I believe that closes on Friday, if I'm not mistaken, Steven. And that's just for guys to get in. You can transfer after, or not transfer, but you can commit after. You just have to be in the portal, to my knowledge, come Friday. Is that accurate?
Yes. So if you're in the portal by Friday, you could make up your mind in July that you want to transfer to any school. Still, the no SEC to SEC rule is still in place. So anybody that leaves an SEC team cannot transfer and be eligible in 2025. But the portal closes sometime on Friday, maybe 11:59. I forget exactly what time it closes. And then typically you may see some names filter out over Saturday or Sunday or to Monday as the paperwork is processed. But by early next week, I would assume we have an idea of all the names that are in, and then we're just waiting on to declare their next stop.
Well, apparently you can get in the portal and return to your school, and you're still eligible at the SEC. I'm sure we'll talk about old David Stone here just a minute, but let's get into overall the conference. Steven's got some winners. He's got some losers. Although one of his biggest losers may have to change after this Aguilar news. But before we get into, you know, just kind of declaring who's winning the second portal window, who's losing it, I did want to ask you real quick, anybody that missed it, we covered it last week, but the NCAA is officially going to change the injury rule, where they have changed it to where you can't, well, they're trying not to, they're trying to prevent fake injuries. So what the rule is, if they spot the ball for the offense and somebody on the defense or offense for that matter falls down, you got to take a timeout or it's a 5-yard penalty. What's your thought on the NCAA trying to do this, Steven? And do you think this will really curb the fake injuries in college football?
I give them credit for trying, you know, some things here. We saw Greg Sankey kind of come out pretty strong against this last year after some of the shenanigans that were going on. So I think this is a good step forward, like pace of play, cutting out the fake injuries, all that's good. This is a step forward too. The hardest part for them, I think, has been trying to sort of sort out like what's a legitimate injury and what's a fake injury, because then you get into a situation of if there's a proposal of a player has to sit out a couple plays or a series or a drive, it's hard to legislate like what is fair and all that. Cause like, what if it is a legitimate injury and they're ready to come back after two plays? So this is kind of a good middle ground. There is one problem with this, though, is, and you said it, when they spot the ball. Mike, if I'm a defensive coordinator and somebody hits a 50-yard pass, I'm telling somebody, fall down, fall down as soon as that's get ready. Don't let them spot the ball. So a step forward, but I still think there are some loopholes in here that coaches will use.
So, yeah, maybe by next year we got to change it to you can't look over to the sideline and then fall down. You got to fall right down. If you just fall down, you can't look at the sideline. You know what? Because Kiff is going to be telling this guy to fall down. You know what?
You could bet. I mean, that's going to be the loophole, right? Everybody's going to be like big completion, big rushing play. Somebody's going to look over. They're going to fall down before the ball spotted. And that's the loophole that they'll have to change for next year. But I'm all for, I love your pace of play, keeping a good flow, but it's going to be hard, I think, to completely legislate this out of the game.
Mm-hmm. All right, Steven. So let's jump back into the spring portal. And again, before you reveal, you know, the teams that are winning, the teams that are losing, maybe what are the biggest impact? Let's start with additions. Everyone gets fired up about the additions. And I don't know if you want to include David Stone in there, but I feel like we should. Where would he factor in? But what are the top additions via the spring portal window in the SEC that you're most excited about?
Let's start with Oklahoma, because you mentioned David Stone, and certainly getting a five-star defensive lineman back is pretty important. You know, those aren't easy to find, guys that are super talented. So I'm interested to see his growth and development. But I think the player I'm probably the most excited for is what Oklahoma got at running back in Jaden Ott. He is a really exciting player and a fun player to watch. From California, going to Oklahoma. Cal fans even made a song about him last year. He is an all-purpose weapon. You know, running back, he can catch the ball. He's good on special teams. The Mateer Jaden Ott backfield might be one of the most chaotic, fun backfields in all of college football, and explosive, dynamic too. So Jaden Ott is probably the player I'm most excited about to see how he translates into the SEC.
Mm-hmm. And I know I didn't ask you this. I probably should have got you prepared before this, Steven, but is there a team, do you think, that upgraded more conceivably than Oklahoma just at quarterback and just at running back in this offseason? We all know you love Arch Manning, so again, but same running back at Texas, so that doesn't count. Is there anyone that that you could think of that upgraded more at those two critical positions than possibly Oklahoma this offseason?
I think that's probably spot on. I think you've gone from, you know, one of the lower rated quarterback situations in the SEC, certainly one with a lot of questions, to a sort of bona fide, you know, proven playmaker and Mateer. Just how he translates to the SEC is going to be so fascinating. But I think your floor is significantly higher. And now you have somebody in Jaden Ott who can take a 5-yard run and turn it into a 50-yard touchdown. You're much more dynamic all around. Your offense feels like it has way more big playability than it did last season. So it's a significant upgrade for the Sooners.
Yeah, and I wonder how much their GM, Jim Nagy, how much credit he gets for putting this all together. I'm sure he's got his hands all over it, but it seemed like, and you know, let's not act like this is the first time it's ever happened, but it seemed like Ott got in the portal and then it wasn't that long later he's signed at Oklahoma, not committed, but even signed. So I'm sure they knew that was coming, but again, that's the game. And for those that are getting it done, you know, not having to have to wait out, a commitment or a recruitment, whatever you want to say of a transfer. I mean, that's given the level of game breaker you said this could be. I mean, that's a real credit to their new GM, Jim Nagy, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I think I don't hesitate to use the word tampering, but I think just having an understanding of we need X and let's go get them, and not having to say when the portal opens, we'll go find somebody. Like, it's kind of when Jaden Ott jumped into the portal, the immediate connection was, hey, everybody's saying he's probably going to Oklahoma. So, I mean, credit to Oklahoma and Jim Nagy and Brent Venables for whatever work they're doing to get prepped for the spring transfer portal and be ready to make moves like this and to us will go back to the weekend, finding a way to keep David Stone in the mix. You know, so having a quality GM and head coach that are on the same page as far as roster management, it feels like after all of last season's bad stuff for Oklahoma, there's been a lot of good this offseason. Maybe even one of the biggest winners in college football as far as the offseason goes.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, so on very high on your list, who's maybe the next guy that stands out? Again, we're just talking spring portal because we're currently active in it, but maybe the biggest commitment, signing, whatever you want to call it, out of the spring portal in the SEC.
Mike, I'm going to stay on the offensive side of the ball. I'm going to go to Jack Andres, the tight end from Texas or from California, transferring to Texas. Mike, you know, Arch Manning is the world's greatest quarterback. He's just getting more weapons with another pass catching tight end. That was a question mark for Texas this spring. So I just love what he brought to the table on Cal's offense. It was kind of an up and down group last year, but he was an honorable mention, all ACC guy. He can stretch the field. He's really a receiving tight end. So as if Arch Manning needed another weapon to start etching that name in the Heisman Trophy, that's what Andres can bring to Texas.
Uh-oh. Hey, we'll get right back to Texas. I'm not trying to change the subject here, but we just had, let me double check to make sure this is confirmed. It is, Stephen. Breaking news here. I mean, this is hilarious. This is hilarious, Stephen. After who is the family right now that in college football is like, everybody is like pointing at him and be like, don't be like, I mean, again, we no ill will, but who's the family we're looking at, Stephen, and we're saying, do not be these people.
Would that be the Nico and crew over there?
So if I were to just tease you with that, what do you think what just happened? You think portal wise, Stephen?
Did his brother hit the portal too?
Madden is hitting a portal. He informed Arkansas that he is transferring. So this is according to Matt Zenich. He does a hell of a job for 24/7. I think he's moved. Yeah, 24/7 CBS. So again, this is a guy, a true freshman. Bobby Petrino was hyping him up, saying he's you know, legit and all this. But again, I didn't realize this, Stephen, until all this Nico drama came down. I don't know if you were aware of this either, but apparently, you know, I knew he was committed to UCLA for a long time, which maybe he's probably headed back there to go play with his brother or something stupid. But he was committed for a long time. He decommitted, and then they literally never set foot in the state of Arkansas, and he signed with Arkansas. So, again, this was probably not going to – I don't know he had much of a future at Arkansas other than you know, they're saying they're liking him here in spring. But, I mean, how laughable is this, Stephen?
Mike, I was just – thinking of, you know, being in California, then deciding to transfer and not set foot on the Fayetteville campus to see Arkansas. What an interesting dynamic there. But not only that, I mean, just the sideshow this offseason. I mean, in some respects, if you're Arkansas, you're losing a pretty talented quarterback. At the same time, maybe you just don't, you know, it's not worth the trouble. And, you know, you've got a lot of other you know, needs that you've been trying to fill in the transfer portal. And certainly depth at quarterback will be one, but maybe it's just better just not to have to put up with the sideshow the rest of this offseason and potentially into 2025, right?
Oh yeah. No, I just said it's a clown show, Steve. I mean, yeah. This is ridiculous, but you know, it's unfortunate for Arkansas. They have a hell of a quarterback, Steven and Taylen Green. They also signed another kid. So, I think they'll be fine, but they're probably better off not having to fool with all this madness. But let's go back. Sorry, that was breaking news there. But Texas, yeah, getting a tight end, that's big for Sark in this offense to go with Arch Manning, a man who would never trade. Come on, Steven. He's the opposite of the Nico family over here. But I mean, Texas, and I would imagine there's a couple guys for Texas that stand out to you.
Absolutely. I love what Texas has done in the transfer portal this offseason. It's not just going out and getting a playmaker at tight end. Emmett Mosley, the receiver from Stanford, a little bit of a possession guy, but he was one of the top freshmen in the ACC last year. And so he's going from a pretty shaky quarterback situation and offensive situation over to Texas, where Arch Manning and Steve Sarkisian, they're going to be able to deploy and utilize his talent more effectively. not only at receiver, they went out and got LaVon Johnson, a defensive tackle from Maryland. Not a lot of stats at Maryland, but 311 pounds. You can never find enough dudes on the defensive line in the SEC to stop the run and be capable of playing, a handful of snaps every game. So, fortifying the trenches, finding playmakers at receiver and tight end. But also, Mike, how about a kicker? Mason Shipley from Texas State. I thought he was one of the best kickers in the Sun Belt last year. You didn't think you'd be getting Sun Belt kicker talk tonight, Mike, but he nailed a 60-yarder against Sam Houston. And after Bert Auburn was up and down last year, Mason Shipley's probably a little bit of an upgrade.
Any idea if he's related to the other Shipleys that have played for Texas?
It's a good question. I don't know that answer.
Well, and I don't know if you know this kid's name or not, Stephen, but there's apparently a defensive lineman, I believe it is, from Syracuse. It was a freshman All-American. He, to my knowledge, he's not made a decision, but I saw somewhere that I believe he's taking a visit to Texas coming up here soon. So Texas likely not done in the transfer portal either on the line of scrimmage. But this is a case, at least the way I understand it, Stephen, where this is, the rich getting richer, you're shoring up. Again, Texas doesn't need a lot of help or anything like this, but they're adding quality depth. Outside of kicker, they did need some help, and they went out and got it. But this is a smart program, shoring up not deficiencies, but again, adding quality depth to make another long run in the college football playoff this upcoming season.
Absolutely. I think you'll see this with Texas, and you'll see this with Georgia and some of the others. It's not about quantity. It's about quality. And Texas has been very precise, very surgical about who their needs are and who they're going after. You mentioned the Syracuse transfer, Murad Watson, and he was a true freshman last year. Also beefy, over 300 pounds, really effective last year as a true freshman at Syracuse. So Texas has already added some bodies there this offseason. I think Travis Shaw is the transfer from North Carolina who has some knee issues, but either way, Mike, you know this, the trenches, much as we talk about like receivers and playmakers and all that, you have to be good in the trenches. So having guys who can just rotate maybe 20, 25 snaps a game, they can give you a little pass rush ability. You're staying fresh in the fourth quarter, trying to beat Georgia or in the playoff. This is some smart portaling here by Texas by going after help on the defensive line and targets for Arch Manning, and go out and get a kicker to sort of win those margins maybe that you missed out on last year.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other standout additions, even if it's just one individual here in the second spring portal in the SEC?
Absolutely, Mike. I think what Georgia did, I was going to say maybe Kirby had a full Easter basket on Sunday of transfer portal additions, but basically three portal gets on Sunday for Georgia. And the one that caught my attention was, I think it was Elo Madozzi, is how you say it, the transfer from Army. Pretty rare to see a transfer from Army going into the SEC, but he was, you watched his tape last year at Army, athleticism, all the stuff you need to be an edge rusher. It's there. How does he adjust to the power conference level will be a big question. Felt like Georgia needed some help off the edge, and they got one of the better ones in the portal. So looking forward to just seeing how he adapts from Army into the SEC.
Yeah, and shout out Kirby and company for, they're another one that doesn't necessarily need to go to the portal. Their roster is so dang good. But, I think in years past, they've been a little hesitant. And again, that's probably a lot of, the confident in the guys they got, the confident in the depth. They recruit literally as well as anybody in the country. So, not a lot of holes on that roster, but it certainly seems like this offseason they're really making an emphasis. If there's a guy they like, they're going to go out there and get him. And, maybe that's the difference between, falling short in a college football playoff to making another championship run. So I just love the fact that some teams are flexible and adjust when they need to, because again, the standard's been set down there in Athens. It's championship or bust. You come up short a time or two, and then maybe go portal heavy. I just think that's an excellent sign that Kirby is again, not that he's rigid against the portal or anything, but he's taking the necessary steps to correct the issues.
Absolutely. And I think just thinking about Georgia coming into this year and thinking about how much they lose from last year, it feels like they have more turnover question marks, all relative considering the level of talent that Georgia brings in. But this also feels like, much like Texas, seeing the end goal is the national championship and trying to work backwards on, okay, here's the needs that we have coming out of the spring. How do we fill them? And the spring portal is, you know, we mentioned it with quarterbacks. It's typically not as loaded as it is in the first window, but you're still getting guys who can help you. And so if you're Georgia, you've got some needs on the defensive line. You go out and get a pass rusher. You're trying to get, I think Bo Atkinson is the other one from North Carolina who also can get to the quarterback. You know, much like Texas, finding guys who can rotate in, bring some experience, and you raise the floor of those positions so that way it's not a complete weakness or your questions are at least minimized. So it feels like Georgia and Texas both doing the things at the edges, you know, speaking for, you know, positionally and also on the roster, to do what they need to get to the national championship game this year.
Yeah. Any other standout additions, Stephen?
Mike, one name that I think kind of flew under the radar was Damian Taylor. He's a transfer running back from Troy going over to Ole Miss, 1,000-yard rusher last season at Troy. You know, Ole Miss has had some turnover in the backfield. They had one running back who was there. Looks like he's leaving. A guy who's just been ultra productive at the Sun Belt level. Maybe he doesn't have to be a 1,000-yard rusher at Ole Miss, but at least giving them another option in the backfield. That was one question that I had about Ole Miss coming into this portal window. Would they be able to add maybe a tier one or tier two running back that was in the portal? And it looks like they did. Damian Taylor, I think, is a really solid pickup for them.
Yeah, and I think obviously last year they were a little short on the running back. I mean, they had freaking defensive line. I get he was effective at times. Shout out Ivy, but I'm clearly in need of running back help. I thought Ole Miss was last year.
Losing three of your top four running backs this offseason, and of course, like you mentioned, resorting to using J.J. Pegues on short yardage situations with the 7 rushing touchdowns. It just feels like they needed, much like some of these other teams, raise the floor, like bring in guys with experience who can play right away, who can give you a instant help at that position. It feels like a smart move. The Portal King, he's been at it again this offseason.
Yeah. Oh, shout out. I said Ivy. You said Pegues. Oh. That's why you're the CFB encyclopedia, Steve. When they graduate, I'm like, okay, new crap. Got to learn them. But it never leaves your brain, does it?
But it doesn't. And I was thinking about the combine. I think they had JJ Pegues like running like little route as like a fullback defensive line hybrid. So he was one of my favorite players to watch. So we don't forget those in the brain.
Yeah. Okay. How about Missouri added a couple of guys here recently, Stephen? I really wanted to ask you about any thoughts that you had on this tight end they got from Iowa. I mean, that's literally all I know about Iowa that does well. They do linemen and they do tight ends. Gavin Hoffman, and then you may not have much info on the receiver they picked up because he plays at Illinois State, but Xavier Lloyd. Anything you could tell us about those pickups that Missouri made here recently?
Mike, I think you're spot on about Gavin Hoffman, the tight end from Iowa. First of all, he was one of the top 15 tight ends coming out of high school in his class. So ultra talented. Also, Iowa knows the tight end position pretty well. So I would say that's a pretty quality pickup, like talent, and Iowa's evaluation plays some role into my evaluation of this for Missouri. So I like the pickup with Brett Norfleet coming back. You don't necessarily need a starter, but a guy who's younger could maybe give you some help on two tight end sets. I think it's a good pickup for Missouri. The receiver from Illinois State, Xavier Lloyd, you know, admittedly, I haven't watched a ton of Illinois State football, but ultra productive. And I think in a situation of Missouri losing, I think, three of their top four receivers from last year, bringing somebody in who is game ready, and he started his career over at Kansas State. So, I mean, considered to have power conference talent, has been pretty successful at Illinois State, and can give them some help right away. It seems like a very low risk, high upside pick potentially for Missouri.
Mm-hmm. And then anybody that missed it, breaking news here. We got to add him to the list now, Stephen. But Arkansas lost Madden Iamalava because he's, Lord knows what they were demanding, and Arkansas probably said, get the hell out of here. But what they did add, Stephen, they added a linebacker, Trent Whalen from Kent State. They landed a corner, Julian Neal from Stanford. And then one guy I'm excited about, Stephen, is a edge defensive end, Phillip Lee from Troy, who I believe had 5 sacks and something like 9 tackles for loss last season. The Razorbacks needed some help. They get a player at every phase of the defense. Anything you know about any of these defensive pickups for the Razorbacks?
The opposite of Texas and Georgia, I think, applies here, is that I felt like Arkansas needed quantity. Given what they lost, given some of the depth concerns on defense at some of these levels, I think getting guys who can help everywhere is a really good thing for this defense. And I think the two out of those 4 additions from the last couple days, I think the 2 that interest me the most, number 1 is Julian Neal at corner, just because he went from Fresno State to Stanford this offseason. He left after the coaching change. Last year, he was targeted 50 times and only gave up 24 receptions. So pretty good size, pretty good coverage ability. Doesn't necessarily need to be a starter. He can be a guy that's maybe the number three corner. Maybe he helps you out in some different packages. So for a secondary that needed some help, here's a guy who's played a lot of snaps at Fresno State, and Stanford thought highly enough of him to bring him in this offseason. Phillip Lee, though, is probably the one that's got me thinking here for Arkansas, because at 240 pounds, I'm not sure that he fits at this as like a full-time SEC defensive end to stop the run necessarily, but 5 sacks, 11 tackles for a loss. You know, Arkansas needed some help on the edge with Landon Jackson moving on. So I'm curious to see how Arkansas plans to deploy him, because it feels like he is very much someone who can get after the quarterback, cause some havoc, which is what Arkansas needs on that defensive front. So I love the pickup here. These pickups feel like they raise the floor for Arkansas, but you also have somebody in Phillip Lee who could maybe be a difference maker, cause some havoc, and get to the quarterback. I think that's a good pickup for the Razorbacks.
Mm-hmm. And then I wanted to ask you, we haven't been able to praise Kentucky much at all this offseason, but they made a couple additions that I really liked as well. Stephen, they got Harley Gilmore from Nebraska, the receiver, who he started at Kentucky. This is the insanity of where we're at in college football. He was at Kentucky. He goes to Nebraska. Now he's back to Kentucky. So, we all know nobody likes Matt Rhule. So I think that kind of proves it. They got an edge defender, Lorenzo Cowan from Southern Cal. And then a name a lot of the people in the comments should know, running back Seth McGowan from New Mexico State. But originally, I think, prior to that, he was at Oklahoma. So just some nice pickups, I think, for Kentucky. What's your evaluation on any of those guys?
Yeah, I think this is a good situation here for Kentucky. We'll start at the receiver, bringing Gilmore back. And I think it might just be connected. Number one, he's got experience in the program, but the status of True Edwards is a bit up in the air. I think he's fighting for that extra year of eligibility. There's been a lot of uncertainty as to whether or not he's actually going to get it. So they brought in a receiver thinking he was going to be a contributor. And now that's up in the air, you're getting somebody who already has played in your system. He's got experience in the program that feels like a pretty solid landing spot for Kentucky's need at receiver. I really like Seth McGowan too. Like New Mexico State, I probably watched too many of their games last year, but their offense was lost. Their offensive coordinator got fired early in the season. Their quarterback play wasn't good, but you could tell, like, at the Conference USA level, he was a guy who was capable of playing at a little bit higher level. And he was at Oklahoma. He kind of bounced around after that to get to New Mexico State. I think the thing that interests me about this pickup is the depth that Kentucky has at running back. Like, you got Wilcox, maybe he's a little bit down the depth chart. He You picked up Dowdell this offseason. So Kentucky's got some running backs. So for a team that has a lot of questions, I think we can at least go into the season thinking they got some playmakers at running back.
Watch them try to do the Vandy blueprint where they just kind of chew up the game clock, yeah. Get it short. I mean, not the worst idea in the world. Hey, shout out one of our favorites, Steven. Cousin Rick, appreciate you, buddy. He just gave us $20. Steven, any thoughts on Texas A&M spring game? Beat the hell out of TU baseball. I love that. Thank you, Cousin Rick. Have you had time? I personally haven't watched it yet, Steven. It's on my DVR, but... did you have any thoughts if you got to saw the Texas A&M spring game?
I have to apologize to our friend Rick. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but I did catch some of the highlights, and a couple things caught my attention. Number one, thank you for playing a spring game, Texas A&M, so that way we could get a little bit of an evaluation on these teams. But also, Marco Jones, the freshman, had 5 sacks in that game, 6 tackles for a loss. I know it's a spring game. Take those with a grain of salt. But A&M's looking for help up front. And I'm curious, we see this every year. Players do really good things in the spring game. It doesn't translate. He's a freshman. Does that translate into production during the year? So I think if you're a Texas A&M fan, that has to be pretty encouraging. The proof will be once we get to August and September. Also, it was good to see Concepcion and Craver get involved right away. Those two guys in the spring game, I think, both had over 50 receiving yards. So your high priced additions at receiver are already paying off. So I think that's a good sign for A&M. You saw some guys flash on the defensive front at a position that's got some turnover. Not a ton we can take away with from spring games in general, but those things were encouraging to me.
Yeah, and I feel like I let Cousin Rick down. But I had family obligations this weekend. Otherwise, I mean, it is on my DVR. I'm excited to watch it. I also saw someone post it on YouTube. So I didn't realize that was going to be a thing, Steven. I don't know if you saw this, but I know the Tennessee one. I saw the South Carolina one. The video quality is not great, but it's just literally fans in the stands recording the whole game. SEC fans are just incredible. They're nuts, and I mean that as a compliment. And the fact they post that online, so there is footage out there to be gleaned from some of these spring games. I know what I'm going to be doing the next couple of days.
Let me also tell you too. If you're an Oklahoma fan, you might want to be doing that with Bryce Underwood in Michigan, because there was the Michigan's game was a televised, and there were several people taking cell phone recordings of Bryce Underwood's first touchdown pass in a Michigan uniform. So like a college football crazy person, I was like watching them all as they came across the feed to see what was going on at Michigan. Mike, you had a craziness of the transfer portal. There was a story on Saturday out of Houston. One of their safeties played in the spring game and then left as a transfer right after. So every week we get one of these crazy or strange transfer portal stories.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he must have had one heck of a spring game if he was out there. You know what?
I think he's going to end up being one of the better safeties to enter the portal this offseason. So maybe he got some NIL offers during the game.
Hey, Steven, we got people asking Athlon questions. I don't know how much you can reveal. My cousin Mike says, hey, Steven, tell us who's on the cover since Nico left. And then we had one suggestion here. Who was it? Da-da-da-da-da. And I think I'm missing it, but I did see it. They said, sub out Nico for cousin Shane. Is Athlon considering that?
We should. I didn't think about that till now. Oh man, I love that idea. Trying to think if I can. I would say this on the cover. I actually don't think it's decided yet. I think the obvious pick is Jermaud McCoy, since he's Tennessee's best player. The injury factor is probably a concern, so I would say he's a candidate. Arian Carter. Maybe Mike Matthews, Boo Carter. A great, great question. I hope to know more by next week, hopefully.
Yeah, I like old Boo. That'd be a good one. Daily reminder from Cousin Ken. Billy Napier, 19-19 in 3 years, and the Gators are not spending money in the portal. thoughts on that, Stephen, where, you know, they got a couple of guys, but the way it's been told to me, and maybe this is just spin, you know, all these coaches, whether you're fans of them or not, they've all got spin that they share to the media, and some people spin it, and some people don't, but this is the best roster we've had down here in Gainesville. Heard that one before, but it kind of played out late last season. But I don't know that they had a ton of. I know they didn't have a lot of defections. I think that was critical. So I don't know how many roster spots there are for Florida to go out there and get a bunch of high profile transfers, because I think they're pretty satisfied. Maybe not across the board, but pretty close to it, to my knowledge.
That was my read on the situation too, Mike. They don't have a ton of glaring needs here. They had five transfers in the first window. They have Harrison Bailey, the quarterback from Louisville. He's been at Tennessee. He's been at UNLV. He is well-traveled. I thought maybe they'd bring in another quarterback this offseason just because of the uncertainty surrounding Lagway. I think that remains to be seen. Maybe perhaps they are the mystery team going after Madden here. to bring that drama to Gainesville probably wouldn't go over too well. Mike, their other portal additions are kind of interesting. I mean, a defensive lineman from UMass, a defensive back from Southern Miss, a punter, and the player that I like the most there is J. Michael Sturdivant, the UCLA transfer at receiver. Nico could definitely use him this year. So, it's not a flashy class by any means. I think there's definitely some quality there. I am a little surprised that we haven't heard them be a little bit more active. You know, maybe they find a difference maker or two on defense, maybe another lineman, maybe a defensive back, or like I said, another quarterback given Lagway's injury situation.
Mm-hmm. Any other teams or players or anything that stands out from this portal? What was your thoughts on? And I know we talked Oklahoma, but did you go give much insight into David Stone and just like, you know, how big of a loss could that have been? And again, we credit Jim Nagy too for landing Jaden Ott and I believe the Stanford offensive lineman, who I think is going to compete at center or guard. But I think ideally, I've heard he's going to be competing for the starting center spot. But, you know, a player like David Stone, I don't know if he factors into like transfer portal rankings and stuff like that, but just losing a guy like that, a homegrown five-star, you know, that would have been a bad look, I think, for Oklahoma. But so, you know, that may be one of the biggest additions, if you want to even call it that, just, you know, keeping a promising player home.
Absolutely. And it also goes back to kind of what we talked about earlier with Texas, and that you don't want to lose guys who can be impact players on the defensive front. And maybe he doesn't start this year necessarily. Maybe he's not playing 700 snaps this year, but maybe thinking like to next year and thinking about where he could be. The talent is there, the development, eventually all that will catch up and he could be an impact player. It's really hard to find five-star caliber defensive tackles in the portal. That's kind of why Walter Nolan last year was a pretty special case. You know, you get guys who are experienced, but you don't get that raw five-star talent at tackle in the portal. So I think just keeping him, figuring out whatever it was with NIL or whatever the situation was, it sort of just solidifies how good of an offseason it's been for Oklahoma. You got your quarterback. You got a playmaker at running back. Figuring out the situation to keep him on campus is a good thing. Also, if you want to think a little bit beyond this, I'll tell you, when I saw that name pop up, the first team that came to my mind was Ohio State. They have a major need on defensive end and defensive tackle. So maybe in a way, Oklahoma hurt Ohio State's portal hopes there.
Yeah. Anytime you say that, Stephen, I'm going to applaud you. So I appreciate you for that. Hey, what are your thoughts on this? Again, I don't know if this is accurate, but Ross Dellinger, I think he does a hell of a job. He's not one to typically throw out false information or anything like that. But he is saying that Joey Aguilar is expected to make less than $1 million. He worded it kind of weirdly. Is expected to pay him significantly less, and he's saying $1 million less than Nico is scheduled to get The 2.4 million he was, so he's saying 1.4 around there, I guess, is what he's saying. What's your thought? Do you think Joey Aguilar is a good deal if he's around less than $1.5 million for Tennessee?
Yeah, I do. And some of this is supply and demand. I just don't know what other quarterbacks are going to be in the portal this offseason. You know, I think if you kind of want to rank them, Nico was the best. Gio Lopez at South Alabama was probably my second best quarterback. And then Aguilar and then Steve Angeli. That's kind of the pool that you're working with here. You know, I will also say, too, like if we think about this in a salary cap sense, let's just say Tennessee had budgeted X amount of money for Nico. You're spending this on Aguilar. In theory, you could spread that dollars around. Like you go out and get a receiver. You can go out and get another, you know, whatever it is you need. So I think he's worth it, given that he's probably going to be their best available option the rest of the way.
Right. And the only reason I think that's kind of important, I mean, I really don't care how much you're worth what someone's going to pay you. So it is what it is. But if Tennessee had to pay them like $3 million or something, I think it would say if they were desperate for that. That's one thing I'd read into that. But also, like, man, it's going to be tough to bring someone in for $3 million and then have them be the backup. You know, it's almost, again, I don't think most of these coaches that are worth anything are making starting decisions based on who's getting paid and who's not. But it's hard to believe someone's going to, you know, not take that well if they're getting paid an insane amount and then they're not playing. You know what?
Absolutely. And Aguilar probably could have driven a pretty hard bargain here too, if he wanted, given Tennessee's, I would say, desperation for quarterbacks in the portal. And I think this, the term like gunslinger kind of came into my mind after we were talking about him earlier. And that kind of fits with how I think his style of play is. And you're talking about somebody who has 1 year of eligibility to come play in the SEC, to play in this environment, to play these teams. It's a perfect showcase for the NFL. And if he cashes in, you got a chance to make even more than that. And if he made more than Nico and the season went sideways, we would never hear the end of it. So I think that's a pretty fair calculation of his value to Tennessee right now.
All right, so anything else, Stephen, before I reveal Stephen's portal winners? This is the point where everybody gets mad, unless you're the winner. Then Stephen's goated, but otherwise he's a fool. Before we reveal Stephen's winners, losers, and keep in mind, this is before, I don't want to tip anything, but this is before Joey Aguilar committed to Tennessee. So that literally happened as we were going live. But any other teams or players or coaches or anything you want to highlight before I reveal this, Stephen?
Mike, I wanted to mention Auburn here because we saw this last offseason in the portal. Auburn, I would say, not necessarily bargain shopped, but they added some depth pieces in the spring to fortify their defensive line. And adding depth, and I think going back to what Hugh Freeze has said all offseason, you know, they were looking for some help on defense, you know, whether it was interior, defensive line, safety, linebacker. They've done that. Like, none of their additions have been guys who are probably going to be all SEC. Like, they've added a linebacker from Maryland. They've added two defensive linemen. They just feel like really solid depth pieces. And, you know, they're going to need some to refill some of that depth that they lost from the tackle spot to the NFL. How do they get all that sorted out? Just adding some bodies on a defense that was pretty solid last year. It sort of just kind of goes back to what you and I have talked about, trying to raise the floor, fill your needs. That's what they've done so far. Maybe they add to it, but I think those are some two solid pickups, and especially at linebacker with Caleb Wheatland from Maryland. You're just giving your defense more depth right there.
And I believe they added Jay Hardy, right? So
yeah,
he's had a wild story. I believe he was from Chattanooga. Tennessee wanted him really bad. He signed with Auburn. Then he goes to Liberty. Now he's back at Auburn. So he's another one that's coming. We made a mistake leaving the SEC. Now we're back. So he'll be familiar. And I don't know if I would assume, but I could be wrong. Maybe he played for Hugh Freeze at Liberty. I don't know that for a fact, but heck, maybe there's some crossover there. I don't know.
I believe he did. If it was just for one season, I think he did play for Hewitt at Liberty.
Well, there you go. So he knows what he's getting himself into. So
yeah, 2022, he played in 13 games for Liberty. Yeah.
Nice, nice. All right, so here it is. Steve is official. Get ready to get mad, folks. Winners and losers in the second portal window here. And again, this before Aguilar, but still. Texas, big winner, Steve. Are these in order? You kind of sent them over to me, or are we just saying overall winners? Because we've got Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri, Kentucky, and Ole Miss highlighted on the winners. Is this in any particular order?
I don't think it's in order, Mike, but I think you could probably make a case like Texas and Oklahoma are one and two. If we were to put them in order, I might slide Ole Miss closer to third up there. So no real order, just more of just kind of how I sent them over to you.
Okay, and then yeah. For the losers, we got Tennessee. It's the last time Steven's on this program. Alabama, LSU, Mississippi State, and Texas A&M. Thoughts on these and maybe that just overall? I mean, we've kind of hit all these teams essentially, but why some are the winners? Why some are in the losers category?
Yeah, let's start with the loser side of this, and it's really just about what, you know, Tennessee up until today with Aguilar, Alabama and LSU, and throw Texas A&M in there. They've all been pretty quiet this portal window. So it's not necessarily that they've lost any key pieces. It's just that they have some probably needs that need to be filled, and they haven't done that. I think LSU and Alabama will be selective, but they've been pretty quiet so far. So far, I think they go into the loser category because they're playoff contenders, and if they want to take that next step, you got to fortify any kind of needs that you have this spring. Thought Mississippi State would be pretty active. They've been pretty quiet so far. I know they were hunting some potentially cornerbacks and offensive linemen this offseason, but so far so quiet for Mississippi State, a team that desperately needs to add to improve this year.
Mm-hmm. And again, if you miss it up the top, Tennessee did land a quarterback, but in fairness, if you remove your orange tinted glasses, even if Mr. Joey Aguilar is, you know, better than anticipated, it's still hard to see him as an upgrade over Nico. So again, I still think this is fair to put Tennessee in the losers category. They're still searching for receiver help. They're still searching for defensive tackle help. Maybe they get those. Maybe they don't. But they're going to need to fill those holes if they want to get out of the losers category. So yeah, and right, like you said, Stephen, Alabama, LSU, not a ton of movement, that, or at least yet. There's still plenty of time, but there's some holes on those rosters that you'd like to see filled. But overall, I mean, I can't bicker with a lot of this. And again, remember, this is just the spring portal window, not the entire portal, just the spring that has been open since Wednesday and closes on Friday. So that's going to be the number one complaint, Stephen, when I tag you and post this here in about 15 minutes. How in the F do you have this team as a winner, this team as a loser? Have you seen the rankings? Yada, yada, yada. But again, this is just for the spring window here.
Especially because LSU would probably be one of the biggest winners right. So far in this portal offseason, thanks to their work in the winter. And now in the spring, they've been quiet. You know, LSU, I think, was probably on the hunt for defensive tackle help, and maybe they get some help at some point this offseason. But, you know, it seems like there's been a lot of chaos, and there has been, but the portal's only been open for a couple days. So yeah, we still have until Friday to see if any names get in there. And then, of course, some of these teams will probably be bringing these guys in for visits, and then they can commit over the next couple weeks. So it's early. I suspect a lot of those teams in the losing category right now will get involved with players one way or the other the rest of the way.
And it can happen quickly, right? Because yeah. I think Joey Aguilar, I think he just went into the portal officially today, mm-hmm. and not several hours later. I don't know that he signed yet, but I mean, we got reporters reporting on what he's making. So, I mean, I would assume deal's done and everything like that. So, yeah, I mean, it can happen very, very quickly.
Yeah, and you know, you also think about like Alabama has brought in, I think they were after a tight end from Troy. So, you know, some of these teams could add players quickly based upon some of their past, you know, visits or past, you know, intel from the, you know, the offseason, knowing who's going to be available. But on Aguilar, and I think the speed at which these moved, you know, I think there was some reporting last week that he was content to stay there at UCLA to fight for the starting job with Nico. Yesterday, Nico commits. Today, he's in the portal in the morning, commits to Tennessee in the afternoon. So, Mike, somebody could enter tomorrow, and then by 5 o'clock, we're talking about Alabama or LSU picking up a difference maker. It moves very fast.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, Steven, a little bit shorter than we normally. I mean, sometimes we push 90 minutes to 2 hours, but Steven's got a lot of work to do, so I don't want to clog him up here. Anything else on the spring portal window, SEC in general? Anything you want to get off your chest here, Steven? Here's your forum to do it.
I have some thoughts on the portal window, you know, for like the magazine guy trying to produce a magazine on portal deadline, but I'll spare you my complaints there, Mike. I think I am just interested to see what happens over the next 5 to 7 days here in the SEC. You know, the no SEC to SEC transfer rule, I think, slowed a lot of movement out of the conference. You know, if you look at a lot of the other power conferences, ACC, Big 12, Big 10, they've all been hit harder by departures. So that SEC to SEC rule probably slowed some of the exodus out of the conference. The question is, some of the guys that are still on the board, keep an eye on Bo Atkinson at North Carolina. He's an edge rusher who could be in the mix for Georgia. There could be some other guys who enter in the next couple of days as well. So I don't think we're done with portal chaos here. I think we might just be getting started with the amount of time we still have left in the portal.
Well, thoughts and prayers to you, Steven, as you are approaching the deadline of the Athlon Sports College Football Magazine, and there's still players considering entering the portal and considering where they got to make their next destination. For Steven's sake, get in that portal, choose your next destination so he can finalize the magazine. That would be nothing more you're probably rooting for at the moment.
Yeah, I'm just rooting for a calm. I was, you know, hoping for the portal to be slow, Mike. No. So I'm now at this point, I'm just rooting for speed. Like, let's get in the portal. Let's get this done so I can get the magazine pages updated.
Be like Joey Aguilar.
Right. I was going to say, yeah, Aguilar speed right there. That is some SEC speed.
All right. Anything else, Steven? As always, don't forget, tell the cousins, where can they follow you? Where can they find your work?
Absolutely. Over at AthlonSports.com, I have a spring portal tracker with all the best players in the portal right now. If you're looking to see who's the best options out there, that's also where all my college football work is. You can follow me on Twitter at AthlonSteven and StevenLCFB over on Facebook and Instagram.
All right. So, hey, that's going to do it for this episode of the show. We'll be back tomorrow with Cousin Shane. I think we're going to do a little bit of unique draft coverage here on Wednesday. But of course, we'll have a show before then. We have one interview that's about to, ready to be posted. So we'll have more interviews, all the content. Stay locked in. Like, subscribe, share. Do all that jazz. Doesn't cost you a thing, and it really helps us out. But for Steven and I, that's going to do it on this episode of the show. We'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.